And welcome to the KGNU Morning Magazine for Thursday, January 20th, 2022. I'm Sam Fuqua, sitting in for Shannon Young. Thanks for tuning in to listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe of Southwest Colorado is going solar and selling the excess renewable energy. Also, this time on our weekly cannabis report, longtime marijuana reporter Leland Rucker digs into the lazy stoner stereotype as interest in cannabis-using athletes grows. And our regular visit with food columnist John Lendorf to talk about National Pie Day and catch up on food news. At the bottom of the hour, we check in with BBC News again, and then Rosanna Longo-Better will continue our ongoing coverage of the Marshall Fire recovery process. She'll be sharing stories from and information for those affected by the disaster. Our day of eclectic music begins, as always, at 9:30 with Brian Eister hosting the Morning Sound Alternative. All that coming up here on KGNU. We start, as always, with headlines. Here's KGNU's Benita Lee.
Colorado's Omicron wave might have peaked, according to state epidemiologist Rachel Herlihy. Herlihy told the State Board of Health Wednesday that data is beginning to back up predictions that Omicron's quick rise might be followed by a quick drop in cases. While the overall COVID cases are still higher than ever, the average positivity rate has declined, at least for the adult population. Currently, 12 to 17-year-old Coloradans have the highest infection rates. And the Denver Gazette reported that Children's Hospital Colorado is seeing record numbers of COVID patients, especially those under age 5. The enrollment period for the state's health insurance marketplace was reopened Wednesday for all Coloradans. It had closed on January 15th, but because the Marshall Fire and the Omicron surge overlapped near the deadline, Connect for Health Colorado decided to give uninsured Coloradans another enrollment window. The new deadline is March 16th. The distribution of free KN95 and surgical-grade masks caused some confusion Wednesday. Governor Polis announced that masks would be available at libraries, YMCAs, and other community centers. Thousands were delivered to pickup points, but some communities ran out within a few hours. Residents who went to Denver Public Library branches learned that masks were not available there. As of Wednesday evening, only libraries were listed on the state's COVID website. For updated mask locations, go to covid19.colorado.gov/freemasks. The Biden administration will apply $3 billion from last year's infrastructure law to overhaul federal wildlife management tactics. The 10-year plan will focus on managing western states most at risk by reducing flammable materials such as grasses and fallen branches. The Forest Service's goal is to shift from fire suppression to forest thinning and controlled burns. Work will begin this year where neighborhoods and forests overlap. This includes the east side of the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, California's Sierra Nevada Mountains, and parts of Arizona, Washington State, and Oregon. Colorado business groups are urging lawmakers to support Governor Polis's proposal to replenish a trust fund benefiting unemployed workers. The budget proposal for fiscal year 2023 would set aside at least $600 million to pay for unemployment claims. The fund ran out of money in 2020 following COVID-related job losses and benefit payments. Business owners are concerned that higher premium payments in the coming years will further strain economic recovery. Several Front Range school districts announced a two-hour delayed start this morning because of icy road conditions. School districts with late starts include Boulder Valley, Adams 12, Jeffco, St. Vrain Valley, and Westminster Public Schools. Parents are encouraged to check their school district's website for updated information. It'll be sunny throughout the Front Range today, in Boulder a high near 40 and a low around 31. In Denver, a high near 43 and evening temps in the low 20s. In Fort Collins, a high near 35 and lows around 19. Outside the Boulder studios, it's around 20 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
Eleven minutes after 8 now at listener-supported community radio. The Ute Mountain Ute Tribe of southwest Colorado is turning to solar generation to provide cheap electricity for its members, but the tribe also has solar ambitions that go beyond the community level. As Rocky Mountain Community Radio's Lucas Brady Woods reports, they include generating solar power that can be sold for a profit.
Driving along a gravel road on the Ute Mountain Ute Reservation, it's easy to see why the landscape is a good place to generate solar power. It's the high desert of southwest Colorado, which means there's a lot of open space and bright sunlight. In one of those wide open spaces, a valley at the base of Ute Mountain, is the tribe's main solar project. Scott Klo is the Ute Mountain Ute's Director of Environmental Programs.
It's a way to save electricity dollars. We even created our own little microgrid here.
The project is made up of rows of solar panels that cover about 4.5 acres of former alfalfa fields. Since it went online in 2020, it's provided electricity to the main town on the reservation, Toyoak. Klo says it helps power homes, governmental buildings, and the tribe's casino. He also says the project is just the beginning.
This project is that stepping stone to get the tribal membership to embrace this technology and what it can do for the tribe.
There are two other community-level Ute Mountain Ute solar projects in the works. One of them will be similar to the Toyoak solar project, but will serve another community, White Mesa. Another smaller-scale project will provide power to a housing facility. But the tribe also hopes solar can offer economic benefits beyond just providing supplemental electricity, by providing power that can be sold outside the tribe for a profit.
We're looking at how to replace those many millions of dollars that once came to the tribe through oil and gas with renewable energy.
The Ute Mountain Utes have been in the oil and gas business for over 70 years, and historically it made up a large portion of the tribe's economy. But that revenue has been declining for a long time. According to Klo, that decline, combined with increasing pressure from climate change, pushed the tribe to move towards a clean energy economy instead. Archie House Jr. is vice chairman of the tribe's council and is also involved in the renewable energy team. He says replacing the revenue lost from the oil and gas industry is really about investing back into the community.
A lot of our revenue that comes from this commercial status here will be focused back into the community to help the individual member, whether it's with food, services, or infrastructure. That will actually boost up the community to a level to where we once seen with our oil and gas funding.
But the commercial project is still in its early stages, and tribal leadership is proceeding carefully with its development. One important step, for example, is making sure the community is on board. House says tribal leadership plans to involve the public through surveys and presentations about the projects. That will help people understand that investing in renewable energy isn't just about making money.
The solar and renewable is more of a clean type of history that we'll leave for our future generations here. It's better to be part of the answer than going off in another direction to where it may not be something good for our future.
And House says community members are already noticing changes to the climate, like warming temperatures and less water. Aliette Frank is a lecturer in the Environmental and Climate Institute at Fort Lewis College. Her work focuses on climate change and tribal communities in the Four Corners region.
It's particularly important in the Southwest because if you bring in the idea of environmental justice, a lot of these populations are the ones that are hardest hit by changing climate.
She also hopes the Ute Mountain Ute solar projects can go beyond their own people and serve as an example for others who can also invest in renewables. Back on the Ute Mountain Ute Reservation, Scott Klo agrees.
Just the magnitude of potential for renewable energy in Indian country across the United States could put tribes ahead of the rest of the nation and, quite frankly, a leader in the world, coming from Indian country, and that's profound.
But he also says, at the end of the day, Ute Mountain Ute renewable energy projects aren't about standing out as a leader. They're about making sure the needs of the tribe's people are met well into the future. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Lucas Brady Woods in Toyoak, Colorado.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm joined by KGNU cannabis correspondent and longtime marijuana reporter Leland Rucker. Leland, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good to be here.
All right. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, you know, if there's one image that I would like to obliterate completely, it's the one of the stoner eating potato chips and dip while watching TV. It's a marketing campaign, folks. It has nothing to do with cannabis. You know, they're trying to sell chips and dip. They're trying to sell whatever they're trying to sell. Unfortunately, it's the way that too many people still look at marijuana users. One of my earliest revelations about cannabis was back in the 1970s, at the beginning of what we now know as the war on drugs and the billions of dollars we've spent on it. Most of the literature that I would read about marijuana was research that the government allowed, and it was always concentrating on the negatives, like the above mentioned. You know, if you smoke marijuana, you're going to be sitting on a couch watching football. And here I was at this point in the 1970s reading about how marijuana made you want to sit on the couch and stuff your face. And I was mowing the lawn, cleaning the house, pumping up the tires on my bicycle after smoking a joint. It was the first one of the first revelations I had that we're not being told the truth here. And now cannabis can be bought in stores by adults all over the country, and research tells us that people who exercise do so after they've used cannabis, whether hitting from a pipe or a vaporizer or downing an edible. So the whole idea of lazy stoners, I don't think so. I would just love to get rid of that. Can it make a person who's already tending that way more that way? Probably, but I don't know whether that has to do with the substance or whether it has to do with the person. I'm still pondering that one. But one of the biggest surprises of the latest research on cannabis is finding that lots of athletes, even those in endurance races, use marijuana when working out. I spoke a couple years ago, with Avery Collins, one of those. It was the first thing I asked him. I said, are you nuts? These people that climb, they go 100 miles, they climb up and down hills. And he admitted to using cannabis for training and relaxation and pain relief. And it's not just athletes. Regular people run, walk, swim, exercise while using cannabis or after using cannabis. But isn't an endurance drug? Does it help you physically? Is the high just a mental thing? These are the kind of questions that we're kind of coming up against.
And I understand CU Boulder is actually looking into this, yes?
Yeah. Laurel Gibson, a CU Boulder graduate student who's pursuing her PhD in social psychology, she's heading a study through the university's newly approved study on physical activity and cannabis effects, or SPACE, an observational study that follows runners after they smoke marijuana. And she hopes to put 52 adult volunteers through 3 different sessions of marijuana use and exercise just to try to find out more about what's going on. Gibson says, we're just looking at how acute cannabis use influences factors associated with regular exercise. And some common barriers that people cite are pain levels or enjoyment, motivation, etc. So there's a lot of different things going on. And pain levels, enjoyment, and motivation are among the subjects that author Josiah Hesse, he comes from Denver, looks at in a new book called Runner's High. He has an easy style, his approach that kind of, you know, makes you look at different ways to look at this. And he talks to people who work out. He talks to ultra marathoners. And it's a fascinating book. And he'll be talking with Boulder Weekly editor Caitlin Rocket at the Boulder Bookstore on February 16th at 6:30 p.m. about his book and about that. It's really a fascinating look. And again, we're trying to just get rid of these stupid stereotypes that people have about people who use cannabis. Are there people who sit on the couch after they use cannabis? Yes, there are. But that isn't everybody who does it. And that's what we're trying to get away from.
Well, Leland, thank you, as always, for coming in and challenging our thinking on cannabis issues, whether it be new news and information or just stigma and stereotype. We thank you for joining us.
That's what we're all about here.
Well, you can hear Leland Rucker on the Cannabis Report here on KGNU the first and third Thursday of every month. Thanks again, Leland.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers.
If you're thinking about supporting KGNU, but you're not quite ready to make a monetary contribution, consider giving a vehicle you no longer use. You can always donate that. We'll arrange to have it picked up, sold at auction to someone who needs it, and invest the funds into covering the news. It's a win-win. Support the programming you rely on. Get started today at kgnu.org or call 1-844-KGNU-CAR. That's 1-844-546-8227. And thanks.
A22 at listener-supported community radio. Sunny skies forecast today with a high around 40 degrees, but we're not there yet, so be careful. Still icy, particularly on side streets. Give yourself a little extra time to get where you're going this morning. Stay tuned next for Radio Nibbles.
Banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate.
Just like old times here, John Lendorf joins us from his home bakery to talk about National Pie Day and catch us up on local food news. Hey, John, how you been?
Oh, good morning, Sam. It's like deja vu all over again. It's slick, but I think it's a good day to stay home and or good morning anyway to stay home and do some baking.
There you go. And National Pie Day just around the corner, right?
Right. And some folks may not know about this whole National Pie Day thing and why it. Why it's so important in Boulder. There's a few silly people who think March 14th is National Pie Day, but that's about math, and nobody likes math. January 23rd is about pie, though.
So,
National Pie Day start is on January 23rd because January 23rd is Charlie Papazian's birthday. Charlie always liked pie on his birthday, not cake. But when he was a school teacher, he declared his own birthday National Pie Day, and now it's celebrated all over the country and all over the world. Charlie is better known in the larger world as the godfather of craft brewing and home brewing.
Well, thank you, Charlie, for designating your birthday National Pie Day. What will you be baking for the occasion, John?
Well, I just discovered that I actually have some frozen Palisade peaches in the back of the freezer. So I think I may be making a something involving peaches. That's really what the day is all about. It's not buying pies. It's making pies. It's pieing it forward and feeding other people, teaching them how to make pie.
Speaking about helping our neighbors in local food news, let's talk about this fundraising campaign that First Bite Boulder has going on to help families in the Boulder Valley School District who have been impacted by the fire. How can we help?
I really like this because there are a bunch of folks who are offering free meals. All you have to do is show up and they'll give you food, no questions asked. But that's a hard ask for a lot of people, asking for a free meal. First Bite Boulder is doing a Food is Love campaign. What they're doing is giving families bundles of gift cards from local restaurants like Ashkara and Cafe Aeon, Carita, Tagabi, Fringe. If you donate to this, then those donations help the restaurants, and they allow the families to take a night off and go out to dinner, which is a great thing at this point when the attention level on the fire has dwindled somewhat.
Well, great to see not unexpected, really, to see the local restaurant community stepping up to help. Any other food news this week?
Oh, tons of it. Unfortunately, the Seeds Cafe on the bridge at the Boulder Public Library has closed. It's had a rough time with COVID and just nobody going to the library and things. So hopefully someone else will open that cafe eventually. But we wanted to thank the folks there for doing a good job with that. There's a couple of new places open or about to open. Boulder Fresh Garden is opening where Doug's Diner was on Arapaho, serving the great combination of breakfast, lunch, and Thai food. You know, beautiful.
Why not?
And also, KFC is coming to Lafayette. Not Kentucky Fried Chicken, but Korean Fried Chicken. Mono Mono Korean Fried Chicken is opening in an old brewery in Lafayette. Has opened. And if you haven't tried it, Kentucky Fried or Korean Fried Chicken is really wonderful stuff.
All right, Korean Fried Chicken in Lafayette. I will check it out. Let's see. And also a new eatery in Longmont?
Yeah, it's called the Main Street Eatery. And one of the people involved is Aaron Landy, a wonderful chef who had a place called Eridu at the Rosetta Hall in Boulder. And that's just open. Also in Longmont, now Longmont finally has a full-service bakery, you know, bread and cake and pie and donuts and all that. La Momo Maze and Marketplace Bakery have joined forces. So that's a great thing if you love bakeries like I do.
Well, finally, got to ask you, what's the best thing you tasted lately?
You know, it was pie, actually.
Surprise.
I was out in the hygiene vicinity, so I stopped in at the Mountain Fountain, a wonderful market in town there, very local, and they make the best gluten-free organic pies I've ever tasted. I had a strawberry blueberry pie that was just wonderful, you know, with that kind of crust that's a little, it's crumbly, not flaky, but it was delicious and well worth eating.
That's Mountain Fountain?
Mountain Fountain Market in Hygiene.
Excellent. Well, you can read John's Nibbles column at boulderweekly.com, and he also runs the Global Pie Society Facebook group. It's a fun group. John will be back next week, as he is every week, here on Radio Nibbles. Great to talk to you, my friend.
Bake a pie for someone you love on January 23rd. Thanks, Sam.
Eats when they come to my house. Pasta fazula, Tallulah. Oh, do have a bagel, bagel. Now don't be so bashful, Nashville. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Hey, this is a party, Marty. There, you get the cherry, Jerry.
Stay with us in just a couple minutes. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better will continue our ongoing coverage of the Marshall Fire. She'll be sharing stories from those affected by the disaster and also information on how to help and how to access resources that are available in the wake of that fire. That's coming your way after a quick update on international news from the BBC. Good morning. It's 8:30 at listener-supported community radio. This is KGNU.